Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, rail 5. We were talking about your time at Nook Camp, when your battalion was the demonstration battalion. Now, I believe you ran into the winter months there, and you've got a bit of a story about that. If you tell us about that.
Yeah, that's quite correct. We were preparing, and the battalion was reinforcing, ready to go abroad. And the January of 1947, beginning of January, end of December, beginning of January 47, the weather turned absolutely atrocious. So much so that all units virtually in the area where we were stationed on Salisbury Plains were sent off on leave. Our Colonel Eric Brickman, he said, no way was my battalion going on leave. They already had enough leave. And that we would go out and forage for our winter fuel. And this we did. He got the adjutant to liaise with the farmers in the area to allow us to come round and not fell trees, but to pick up the trees already on the ground, all the timber that was on the ground, we could salvage, and we brought back to Nook Camp. And this was the fuel for our fires in our huts. Now, at first, everyone was a bit despondent about this, you know, why couldn't we get a bit of leave, like, you know. But with the heavy falls of snow, we actually relished the going out foraging. For the simple reason, we had so much fun, snow fights, etc., and it put a lot of colour on our cheeks. We got back to camp in the evening and we were absolutely starving. And as luck would have it, we had a good team of cooks in the cookhouse who fed us exceptionally well. And we were just young 18 and 19 year olds frolicking about in the snow and thoroughly enjoying it. And at the same time, keeping ourselves very warm in the huts at night. When the bad weather abated, the decent weather came in, then all the units started to come back. And needless to say that there was no more demonstrations for us after that. We had the advance party of the Seaforth Highlanders, who were taking over from us, arrived, and we were in the process of handing over the various demonstration duties to the Seaforth.
Now, what was the process of handing over to the Seaforth? I mean, you were a bit junior then, you might not have known, but
yep.
How was it all done?
The process was very simple, actually. What we did was, we carried on doing demonstrations, but with them, the Seaforth Advance Party, alongside us. And we instructed them as to what happened in the various demonstrations. And the Advance Party of the Seaforth, the officers and but mainly all senior NCOs, they were trained by us how to conduct the various demonstrations. When that was finished, we then concentrated on getting packed up, ready to go abroad.
Now, what would you take with you? Would you take everything with you, or what?
We took everything with us, except weapons. We packed all our equipment, clothing and equipment, and on the 14th of February, we embarked on a troop ship called the HMT Almanzora. Almanzora, Almanzora, Almanzora. Now, this troop ship was a very, very old ship, and it only held the battalion, no more nor no less. We were very, very contained in that. And as I say, on the 14th of February 1947, we set sail from Southampton, and it took us 7 days to arrive in Gibraltar.
Now, what were conditions like on this old troop ship? Sometimes they were a bit rough.
The conditions were very, very cramped, but the fact was that we were very strictly disciplined, inasmuch as it were to keep our troop decks absolutely spotless. This was paramount, that inspections were held every morning, very, very stringent inspections, and we were sleeping in hammocks, in actual fact. Now, that was some experience. Having not been to sea before, we got into some state, all our young soldiers, there was hammocks getting put up, and as you climbed into them, they turned turtle, and you landed back on the deck again. So it took us about 2 days training to get used to our hammocks, so that we could get a decent night's sleep.
Were they comfy once you got used to
them? Well, they were very comfortable. Once you got used to them, it was just every bit as good as sleeping on a mattress. Possibly in many ways even better than sleeping in a mattress or a bed.
Now, what were the inspections like? What, the cleaning routine for your mess?
In fact, we ate, slept in the troop deck. And all the troop decks had all the pots and pans were all laid out in the troop deck. And before every meal, the troop deck orderlies, so many men detailed, who would go to the galley and would fetch all the food back in these containers. And there were, each table, I'd say about 8 to 10 men at a table. And the containers would be put at the end of each table, and you were served by an NCO from there. When the meal was over, then the containers were taken into a cleaning room and thoroughly washed and dried and placed again in the troop deck, on the troop deck. The inspections in the morning were by the company commander, who would come round and inspect the troop deck. Now, as I said, his inspection was absolutely stringent, for obvious reasons. They were living such close proximity. Hygiene was of the utmost. And it's amazing, it's typical of British soldiers. We can adapt so easily. Although we were only on board 7 days on the ship, we managed to adapt extremely well. Every morning we had to go on boat stations for boat drill, which entailed every company lining up in their various boat stations with your life belts on. You would find that also an officer would come along and inspect to make sure that your life jacket was properly secured. Once the lifeboat stations were finished, then we were more or less finished for the day. We maybe get a series of lectures, because certainly there was no room to train on the ship. You couldn't do any weapon training. So we were subjected to lectures by certain members of the battalion.
Now, what would the lectures be on? What sort of thing were you doing with them?
Well, any subject. The one big thing we always liked to teach about was regimental history. They would teach about regimental history, or, as I think I mentioned before, Army Bureau of Current Affairs things, keeping us up to date with what was happening in the outside world. And this was all that we had room for. The only thing at night would be maybe tombola would be organised on the troop deck, probably run by a colour sergeant or sergeant major, who would organise sessions of tombola. I can't ever remember seeing a film or anything on that ship, because it was so antiquated that there was no great facilities for entertainment. However, we managed to cope all right. We thoroughly, in actual fact, almost to a man, every one of us, this was our first adventure at sea.
I was going to ask, what about seasickness? Was that a problem?
Some chaps did become a bit seasick, but we were lucky in this respect that the weather was very calm all the way out. We didn't have any massive waves or the ship heaving about, and I think this managed to keep the seasickness to a very low level. I know I certainly wasn't seasick, or any of my friends, but we did hear the odd guy retching over the side or in the toilets, but it was very, very rare. Later on, however, I did experience really rough weather.
Now, anything else about the voyage? You were off to Gibraltar, weren't you?
Yes. When we arrived at Gibraltar, each company had, it wasn't just one barracks. We had various camps in the Gibraltar. My company, C Company, we were detailed to go to a little a camp called Little Bay Camp.
Little Bay.
Little Bay Camp. Now this was on the west side of the rock, and our task was to guard German prisoners. In the camp, which was wired, totally wired, searchlights placed out there, there was approximately 500 German prisoners of war, all Afrika Korps. Now, the vast majority of these prisoners were from the east zone of Germany. And as there was so much trouble in east zone, virtually the start of the Cold War, the authorities quite correctly did not rush these men back to Germany for the simple reason a lot of them didn't know where their families were. Their families had to be traced, and sadly, on many occasions, we were called in to cut down some of these prisoners from the toilets. They'd hang themselves because a lot of the families didn't survive the war. And when these men were told this, then obviously having been 5 years in captivity and then having no family or prospects to go home to, that was the end for them. And we had quite a fair old amount of suicides in this camp.
Tell me about the guard duties. Were you actually on guard duty?
What happened was this. Within the compound, prisoner compound, there was a British staff, administration staff, commanded by a major. Now, all these men were very, very fluent in German, and they administered the prisoners. Now, the prisoners were allowed to come out to work in our dining hall, work in the sergeant's mess, and sundry other jobs in the stores, etc. But whilst they were out, they got the run of our camp, our part of the camp, but they couldn't get out the main gate because we had a guard on the main gate. So these prisoners were quite happy to work with. I know I worked in the sergeant's mess for several weeks, and we had two of them worked in there, and they were excellent guys.
How did you get on generally with the German POW?
Very well indeed. We got on very well indeed. There was no animosity, and the Germans, for their part, had enough of fighting. Because most of them had been spent 5 years in the Afrika Korps fighting in the desert, in the Western Desert, and they were very, very subdued by this time.
So it was friendly both ways.
Friendly both ways. There was no, and the camp staff, the permanent staff in the camp, they also helped. They were very, very helpful, in as much as they liaised between our company officers and the German prisoners. And as a result, a tremendous friendly spirit arose. And I don't ever remember any problems whatsoever with these Germans. Now then, at a certain time, our commanding officer, as I mentioned, he was a very, very strict man.
Well, tell us a bit about him, because you've mentioned this is Colonel Eric Brickman. What was he like? Tell us.
Brickman was a very strict man. His presence was pretty awesome. When you were in his presence, you felt he was pretty overpowering. He was a very strict disciplinarian. He had had a hard war. He won the DSO during the war. But he was of the old school that discipline was paramount, and that he would brook no ill discipline. However, he proved that he was a very, very humane man, very humanitarian, in as much as this, that he got the officers of the battalion together and he explained that he felt it was terrible that these men should still be in captivity and that they should be allowed certain freedoms to leave camp, go into the town. And eventually he got permission to open the gates to these German prisoners of war, and they were allowed to out into Gibraltar to be back. I think they'd be back somewhere in the region of 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening. But once they had finished their duties within the camp, they were allowed out from, I think it was about tea time, half four in the afternoon, till about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And when this happened then, the wire netting came down. The Germans were no longer incarcerated in the camp. It became a pretty open camp. And we never ever heard of any trouble whatsoever in the town. The Germans were very respectful to the civilians, and was never any problem. The military police obviously had been alerted to make sure that there would be no trouble, either A, with the soldiers in the garrison, or the civilians in the garrison and the Germans. And frankly, this was a fantastic exercise. There was never any trouble that I can ever remember. And then eventually our CO, he badgered the War Office, as it was then, to make sure to get these guys, even get them back to Germany and rehabilitate them in the Western zone and get them back gradually into their homeland. Now this was an aspect of this man, Brickman. He, although he was very hard, he showed a tremendous humanitarian feeling for these prisoners of war. And I think we took real estimation a lot by that. We all recognised what the man was doing, and we accepted it.
Now, what were your living conditions like at Little Bay Camp?
We were living in Nissen huts. Nothing elaborate, it was pretty Spartan, but we did have lockers, and we did have a foot lockers, and we kept ourselves
decent beds.
Sorry,
were the beds decent?
Oh yeah, we had the usual army bed with a proper mattress, and this is where we were introduced to sheets and pillow slips. Up until then, we'd never known sheets and pillow slips, and this was a fantastic luxury. We absolutely loved it. And the sheets and pillow slips got changed every week with our laundry. We had our laundry submitted every week, and our sheets and pillow slips. And it was like living in the Buckingham Palace from then on. It made life much more pleasant.
Now, what about a typical day? So what would a typical day's duties be like while you were in that camp? Just your company?
Yeah, well, in this little big camp, the duties were pretty much dealing with cleaning, maybe a drill parade, company drill parade by the sergeant major, swimming in the afternoon. We were lucky in as much as it, although the tide, the Mediterranean tide doesn't get her out, we were lucky with a decent area where we could leap into the sea in the afternoon. But the duties were very menial, really, really purely to keep ourselves, keep the camp in good nick. We had guard duties, especially in the evening. We had patrols during the day, unarmed, like, patrols during the day, but then in the evening we'd mount a main gate guard. Once the camp was closed down, then the main gate guard would control any movement in or out of the camp in the evening until the next morning.
What about training? Was there any specific training going on?
Very little. It was a question of space. It was a pretty small camp, but what we did occasionally get, we'd have some weapon training run by a platoon sergeant or your platoon junior NCOs, section commanders. But we were very restricted. We would have the odd route march up the rock, march up the rock and back down again. But once again, the space was so confined that we couldn't really take part in any massive training exercise. It was a massive change from soldiering in the UK, where we had bags of space to take part in exercises.
But what about recreations? I mean, did you get out into Gibraltar?
This was one of the great things of Gibraltar. Recreationally, it was a wonderful station. We had the main gym, we had the garrison gym up the rock a bit, which we could go up there, the battalion basketball team would play up there. Hockey, we had the hockey pitches down in the Royal Naval Grounds. We had football pitches down the Royal Naval Football Grounds. And boxing, there was tremendous scope for boxing. I eventually, not long after we arrived there, I eventually fought lightweight for the company team. And we would start intercompany boxing, and then from there you would go to fight other regiments. Now, the regiments on the rock at the time were the 5th Royal Northumberland Fusiliers and the Royal Engineers. They were the main regiments. The Northumberland Fusiliers, they were stationed down in Casemates Barracks, which the last time I was over in Gibraltar no longer existed. It was just a lovely big shopping centre. But the Royal Engineers, they were pretty heavy on the ground, and they were great competitors. They had some great boxers. Hockey, I started to play hockey there as a goalkeeper. Football, now once again, among the National Service lads were some good footballers who were automatically went straight into the battalion first team, and we saw some really good football matches down in the naval grounds where it was the main football pitch.
And so the sport was important to you, obviously.
Sorry?
The sport was important to you, obviously.
Sport was very important. It was the all and be all and end all of most of our life there. However, we were then told that we could cross into Spain.
Hang on a bit. What about going out in the evening? Would it be best to do the bit in Spain first?
No, first of all, shortly after we arrived there, it was announced in battalion orders that everyone could wear civilian clothes. Up until then, we weren't allowed to walk out in civilian clothes. And what happened was, you applied to wear civilian clothes, and you had to get dressed up on a certain date, and you would go in front of the commanding officer, and he would inspect your clothes, your civilian clothes. And if he thought they were ideal, then you were allowed to wear them. If not, that was it, you had to stick by your uniform. But in the main, most of us all passed muster in that respect.
So what sort of civilian, are we talking sports? What type of civilian clothes will it be? Was it sports jackets or what?
As long as he didn't mind flannels and sports jackets and open necks, but it was mainly lounge suits. He wanted guys to encourage us to wear lounge suits. But as I say, most of us got through the inspection, and I can remember a pair of brown flannel things and a sports jacket, open neck shirt, and that was it. We were allowed to walk out in the evening in civvies. Now, the town itself, for entertainment, it was just mainly bars in the evening. Now, in most of these bars, there would be a band that consisted mainly of girls, young girls. And these young girls were imported from Spain. And they would have to be off the rock by midnight. They had transport come and take them up to the frontier. And they weren't allowed to mix with us. My haunt was the Royal Bar. I used to walk into the Royal Bar just near the main square in Gibraltar.
What was it like? Give us an idea what it was
like. It was fantastic. Now, the Royal Bar was quite good, actually. It had a lovely band, and I fell in love with the piano player, the pianist, Isabel. I don't know how to get her name. She was beautiful. And we used to send the girls up drinks. We were allowed to send them up drinks and what have you, you know. And we could go up and dance with the local talent, like, you know. And as I say, half 11, we had to get up and start getting back to camp for midnight. The other bar down the road, there was another bar down the road, what was it called now? I can't remember it. But had these swing doors like a an old western type bar. And often, as you went, you walk past there, a body would come flying out. You know, it was where all the brawls and the rock started, you know. Either among the squaddies against each other or against the sailors. But
You went in there as well, did you?
Sorry?
You went in there as well?
Not very often. I think I only went in there about 3 or 4 times, and each time I did finish up in a fight. Like,
you know? How would these fights start, you know?
Just something stupid, you know. Somebody would get the needle if somebody was staring at them or something. Or somebody say, oh, you're Northumberland bastard. You know, things like that. That's it. Once the drink took over, things used to start hotting up, like, you know.
Now, how rough were the fights? You know, I mean, because you know there's different levels of fighting.
I'll tell you what, I would say they were rough, tough, but there was very, very little of the kicking a guy when he was down. We never, very rarely seen that, or using bottles. It was just fist fights. You know, I never ever can remember anyone, Matlow or Soldier, coming out seriously injured out of these fights. They were absolutely fantastic.
And sounds like you enjoyed them at the time.
It was a process of growing up for a young man in a totally different atmosphere from what we've been used to, you know. And there was a naval cinema there. We used to see some good movies there at the naval cinema. And they also had the Theatre Royal in Gib, where they used to put on some good shows.
What type of shows?
But we didn't really go to them, except later on when the Cameronians formed a concert party, which I'll come on about later on. But,
would you go up the rock and climb the rock and all the rest of it? You know, the sort of touristy things.
Not really. We were all more or less spent a lot of our time in Spain, over in La Linea, which we had to have a visa to get across there.